You are listening to the INCJ podcast, conversations about international criminal justice.
Hello, I'm Rob Watson, and this is an INCJ podcast. And I'm joined today by Dr. Victoria Knight, who is a... Actually, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, Rob. Yes, thank you. Dr. Victoria Knight. I'm an associate professor at De Montfort University. I've been there a very long time, 25 years. And in that time, I've been a researcher mainly looking at the role of mass communications, digital, within prison settings.
Now, we're going to be working on a webinar with colleagues, an international webinar in the next month or so, about rehabilitation in the use of digital technology, AI, other forms of technology in the rehabilitation process in prisons. And you've written a blog for the INCJ website. Do you want to just kind of sum up what you said in that blog?
Yeah, I think the last few years, given, I suppose, my time spent watching the technological evolution of certainly of our prisons, certainly more recently, I had the excellent opportunity to work for Unicree, which is a crime and research arm of the United Nations. And I work closely with Professor Stuart Ross from Melbourne University. And we were appointed to do a study looking at this idea of digital supporting rehabilitation, or in short, digital rehabilitation. And that was a really fantastic opportunity for me to not only assess what current evidence is out there, what we know, engage with practitioners from around the world, and also consolidate and review some of my own thinking about how we understand both the prison and this idea of rehabilitation. And both of those terms separately are contested and debated at length. And so it's given me a wonderful opportunity, I think, to reflect on what I know and how I know it. And that project itself gave me a wonderful opportunity to access prison services outside not only the UK but Europe, and to look at places like Namibia and Thailand and have a look at how they do rehabilitation and how they deliver it and how their prison systems work. And naively, I think at the beginning of my career, right, I thought, well, prison's prison, right? And rehabilitation is rehabilitation. And this project's given me a wonderful opportunity to assess that. And also how people relate to technology and the kinds of relationships that we have with technology, and how that is integrated into people's lives, and context in some is so important. So I'll give you a little anecdote. What I learned when I went to Thailand, when we talk about, say, delivering education in prisons, and in many other jurisdictions outside Thailand, the role of technology is really, really important, because what that means for a student in prison, they can perhaps take a tablet or a laptop back to their prison room, cell, wherever they're living, and continue learning or do learning after they've done some work, for example. So this idea of distance learning is certainly normalized in many cultures. That idea in Thailand, for example, is not quite the same, because they see learning as a group experience. So presenting someone with a laptop and say, hey, get on with some learning and get your qualification in X, Y, Z, the cultural context in even how we think about learning is very, very different. And so it's given me that opportunity to then assess what evidence we have. And I think I kind of highlighted in the blog that I do have some deep concerns about the speed in which our justice systems broadly, so to include probation, prisons, courts, policing, and all those other services around it that we're hurtling along with technology, as wonderful as it can deliver some really important things for people, I worry that the evidence base that we have isn't culturally specific. So this idea of exporting a model of digital rehabilitation to another jurisdiction worries me. And I think we need to kind of assess that. What that also means as well, and an important group in this discussion, is not only the people in prison, but the staff and associated beneficiaries, so that may be NGOs, and how they interact with technology. So one of the biggest take-homes around this topic of digital rehabilitation is around the needs of staff and their competencies and attitudes towards technology, because they are the people interacting with. The other key take-home for me is around digital inclusion. I think this project and other projects has highlighted to me how people within the justice system are actively digitally excluded. And that runs along kind of wider exclusion aspects. And one of our speakers at the webinar will be talking to this idea of exclusion and inclusion. And so I think I have concerns about how the pace in which we're moving here, and I'm perhaps coming back to the staff aspect, because there's a lot of talk of using AI in supporting staff in the work that they do in our prisons. Stuart and I are just about to have an article published where we argue in that article, based on the research that we did for the United Nations around this, we need to move past this need to introduce technology purely on an efficiency agenda. And that's what I'm witnessing in many jurisdictions, and I find that problematic. And I think what we set out in our report on digital rehabilitation is that technology is only helpful if it's meeting the needs of humans, and that technology in itself certainly isn't the answer. And so I worry about, you know, that kind of those tensions between understanding the lived experience of both people in the justice system and also staff that are working at the coalface, their lived experiences of working in that space and working in that space with technology. And like wider society, we're in an era, aren't we, of datification. Everything's measured, hard outcomes, and that we're measuring, and we're collecting more and more data by using technology. And so I think there are some important conversations to be had, in my view, around this idea that the justice system could increasingly trust data more and more without that kind of human oversight, more than the testimony of the people that are living and breathing the the criminal justice system. So I worry about that, and I think we need to have some really important questions, and I think that links to the topic of artificial intelligence as well. And you know, it's a hot topic and everybody's talking about it, certainly in this space. The pace in which that has gained momentum is becoming increasingly important. So I am worried about available evidence that we have in this space. And I think there is some anxiety around kind of policymakers, those that are making decisions of kind of choosing what a service does next with digital in mind. And there is a paucity of evidence because it's a new frontier, right? And so we haven't got that evidence. And I think it's really important that we can look to other sectors. So, for example, in education, the kind of technological evolution has happened at a faster space, for example, in schools and universities. We can also look at health. There's some really interesting use of technology, certainly in the kind of health space. For example, certainly when we're talking about people who are in the criminal justice system but serving their sentence, say, in the community, so they would be on probation and supervised that way. There's a lot of talk of using remote supervision for the low risk in individuals. So this kind of remote contact that they could have with their probation officer. But we can see parallels in our health services. So, for example, there's, you know, and it's certainly hurtling the head, we look at this idea of a digital ward. So people don't have to go into a hospital, but they're receiving the care and services from within their home. Whilst I know these sectors are very, very different, I think we need to look outside the kind of criminology, criminal justice space, to look at how services have managed those kinds of challenges as well. Yeah. So I think the other thing that I'm interested in, and I don't know the answers to this, I think that project has really kind of inspired me to ask some questions that I'd never asked before. And particularly when we're talking about AI in rehabilitation and the role that it could have in supporting people to move away from a life of crime. And I think there's a really interesting provocation here when we're thinking about AI. That AI doesn't just assist rehabilitation, it is then going to reshape what rehabilitation means in a digital world. So the way in which we work is changing, right? We've seen the emergence of the gig economy come, you know, 15 years ago, that wasn't really a thing, and how normalized that is now. So I think I've got some really interesting and curious questions around what's this going to do to rehabilitation, and what's that going to do to how we then define the success as someone achieved rehabilitation with the support of using digital tools. And so then if we're reviewing what rehabilitation means, are we then going to have to redefine what this kind of success measures are? Or if someone fails, what, you know, are we going to be ramping up? Will we have different expectations and measures? What impact will it have on the kinds of vulnerabilities? And there's some really interesting work. One of our speakers, Bianca Reisdorf, is really hot on this. So hopefully she'll mention this in the webinar. around people who, for example, have been in prison and they come back out into the community, haven't got, you know, they haven't had, they haven't got up-to-date digital skills. So it makes them more vulnerable to things like scams, but also because of their histories that they don't want online profiles. So actually people are avoiding technology because they've been in the criminal justice system, which then adds a new layer of vulnerabilities to those groups of people that are already marginalized. So I think there's some really interesting questions about how the digital world is going to impact on what we understand rehabilitation to mean. There's lots of concerns in the sector around jobs, you know, how people, for example, probation officers are going to do their work. How is it going to change? And hopefully one of our speakers at the round table will speak to this in relation to, for example, probation settings. And if we look back in history, you know, I remember talking, for example, to prison officers when they first got telephones introduced into our prisons and what that meant. It's like people can, and they had to hide the phones in their desks and lock the offices because they didn't want prisoners to access this telephone. And so it's really interesting when we look back at kind of history as well and how we responded to that. Radio, for example, Rob, you might be really interested in this, is that it was piped into the wings of the prisons from kind of big speakers in the corridors or on the landings. And you know, you asked the question, well, who got to choose what radio station? And it was that, you know, it's like, well, the governor decides that they've got to listen to Radio 4, for example. So it's really interesting, isn't it, how I think when we look back at history, we can learn a lot from, you know, although it's not the same as AI, how it shifted working practices and how people organise themselves and how people relate to each other. Can you imagine a prison that was probably very silent? All you could hear was human noise, and then you've got music blaring in or a sports program. How's that? That must be fascinating.
You've triggered a memory of is it the Green Mile, the film with about the death row inmates, and where he captures the PA system and plays, I don't know what piece of music is, but he plays it out and obviously gets into a lot of trouble for it. But it raises a question. There's a kind of thought that I'm not sure. Well, figure out, you know, what people are going to be responding to and discussing in the webinar. But it's, you know, there's a, you know, what is the point of prison? And we, and you know, there's the panopticon view and the kind of technology of punishment view about an incarceration as a process itself. So you can measure that process, you can look at the transactions from it, but actually the other side of it is, if you like, salvation and redemption for people. So almost in a space of kind of providing a place for spiritual re-engagement is something we've, the danger is that because we focus so much on process, actually that part of the rehabilitative process can't be dealt with through management, technocratic process management, and it has to be, there is almost to it, and I use this term in an inverted commas, you know, a spiritual side of this, which is people reflecting inwards and looking at their, you know, what they've done, what their goals are, what their achievements are, who they are, and coming out of this process in a way which is as a redeemed person, in a way which underpins a lot of, you know, kind of advocacy and reform for prison policy and criminal justice policy. Whereas we tended to get to the point where this is just about, you know, we collect the statistics and we collect the information, and that somehow does the job. We're missing part of the picture. Is that an appropriate thought to have?
Well, I think the advent of technology, and it's already happening in our prisons, and I certainly saw it with my TV research when they introduced TVs inside prison cells, how that changed relationships, for example. And it changed the nature of the prison, that it wasn't this hermetically sealed container and the outside world is kept out, that people were able to access the outside, albeit mediated. And that made significant shifts. So if we could like hurtle down 50 years and look back to now, I think what we may well see, and I have mixed feelings about this, but I am coming to your point, is around reform. And I think there are a number of catalysts to this idea of reform. Much of that has been accelerated by COVID and the need for our justice systems to catch up and keep services moving. So in terms of that kind of biosecurity dimensions, that forced many of our justice services to accelerate their adoption of technologies, whether it's video calls or the use of the telephone, accessing education. Many jurisdictions have very strict regulations about, you know, that prisoners should be able to access work and education, and how do we keep that going in a kind of COVID kind of context. So I think there's that, but also is our, in many jurisdictions, our justice systems are quite in crisis, and I think every nation is littered with examples of failures. And I think what worries me is that technology is seen as a fix to some of these very human problems. Overworked staff, de-skilled staff, more and more problematic people coming into their care who have deep trauma, health problems, et cetera. So complex people with not much budget, and we see that the world over. And in many countries, the use of the justice system, there's an appetite for it. There are some exceptions across the world, and often Scandinavia is always heralded as a nice exception to that. So I've been working with another academic in Sweden, and taking a look at their context has also, you know, helped me to realise that I think globally there is a crisis in justice, and technology is seen. There's a discourse around it being able to help fix some of these problems. And that technology alone, unfortunately, is not going to help. It's a human problem, and it's humans using technology.
And it's a dehumanisation process, which is the equal and opposite. It was the Shawshank Redemption, not the Green Mile. I know they're both films around the same time, but it was the Shawshank Redemption. Just, you know, the whole, how do you think you're going to deal with this in the webinar in terms of the different perspectives of, because this is a huge area, and we could probably chat about this for a long time.
So in the webinar, we've got three great speakers, and they've all done extensive research, and people always kind of say to us as researchers is, well, what's good and what's bad? And you go, it's complicated. And I think it's so Bibi's work will highlight the kind of impact of social digital exclusion, and the need for, you know, it's not just technology, it's everything else around it. So it's the human support, and also the digital skills and the digital inclusion that's really important. Dr. Carolyn McKay's work on vulnerabilities is absolutely fascinating, and this idea of technology being able to kind of humanize people. So to be able to access groups of recovery, for example, that you can't access if you're in prison, you know, and you talked about spirituality, being able to access resources that support that kind of healthy lifestyle, be that spiritual health, mental health, being able to up your skills, get your life admin better organized, take some responsibility for all of that. And a really interesting, we're going to be hearing from Dr. Sarah Ellison around the research they do around addiction recovery and how their service is helping people to move from prison to community, and that this digital application can help with that continuity of care. So the shock is for some people that they've got quite a bit of support in prison, and then they go out into the community and everything falls apart. So I think what we've done is we've asked our invited guests, our presenters, we've presented them with a kind of series of provocations, really, and I don't know yet that how they're going to respond to that. But I think there will be topics around ethics, around lived experience and the importance of that, and that not to lose that. I think that will be at the beating heart of it and what people need. And the practice challenges as well for our justice system as a whole. Yeah, I think I'm anticipating that these kinds of topics will be raised there.
Well, I'm anticipating a very engaging session, and looking forward to hearing all of the different facets and sides of this discussion, because I think it's going to be a long conversation, I think, and hopefully we'll do this over a number of events and different forms of media and things like that. I think it's certainly when you start to think it through, it has a lot of angles that you kind of maybe didn't initially think was going to be important, but which actually have quite a considerable knock-on effect. I mean, what one of the things that springs to my mind, I'll kind of let us close with this, is kind of, you know, we need to retrain our AI and business managers to understand the human condition and not just to understand the numbers and the process. Yeah. It's like it's where we are in the chain and the link. You know, we have to kind of keep going backwards and forwards with this. So are there any last thoughts of anything we've not covered?
Yeah.
And then I'll let people know where they can find out more information.
Thank you, Rob. I wrote this down last night, and I was sort of thinking, I was trying to prepare for this and think about, well, what could we encourage people, you know, our listeners, our viewers, our attendees, and also participants, because we've got the round table as well. And I think, can we ask digital tools to fix fractures created by policy? Can, you know, or human, the messiness? I mean, look at the world at the moment. It's on fire, isn't it? And
well, it's the Promethean challenge, isn't it? You know, it's like, is technology going to fix the human condition? And you know, we're imperfect and we fail a lot of things. And it's like, it's suddenly expecting to be able to transform ourselves without transforming transforming society and the world around us without transforming ourselves.
Exactly.
Is a huge issue. Yeah. If you are intrigued and interested and want to follow up on this, if you go to the INCJ website, which is, if I can find my Firefox browser, it's criminaljusticenetwork.net. We've got a number of quite a lot of podcasts and videos on the site, and we're also on social media, and the links are all up on the website, and there's Victoria's blog is there as well, so you can get back into that. And we will look forward to, you can still register for the webinar as well, so we're looking forward to it, bringing people in for a very, what I'm sure will be a very interesting conversation. But for now, thank you very much, Dr. Victoria Knight.
Thank you, Rob, and I'll speak to you soon. And thanks, everyone, for listening, and hope to see you at the webinar and roundtable. Thank you.
You have been listening to the INCJ podcast, Conversations about International Criminal Justice. To find out more, go to our website at criminaljusticenetwork.net or follow us on Twitter at INTCJ Network.